You're listening to Kizuki, the podcast. I'm Mei Yoshikawa, and I define the Japanese concept of Kizuki as the following. Kizuki. 1. A moment of epiphany, an aha of realization or insight which opens the knower to a new dimension of truth that was formerly unknown. 2. Steps in an incremental growth of awareness, resulting in a movement from ignorance to greater awareness of the bigger picture. A kind of knowing that cannot be undone, that cannot be unrealized. As a longtime yoga and meditation practitioner, a world traveler and curious self-explorer, I'm obsessed with Kizukis. Listen on each week for inspiring and enlightening stories that may just tip you over for your next aha. On this week's episode, The Boyfriend Who Cried. There's a kind of love that doesn't end when the relationship ends. It softens, changes shape, but somehow creates this heart space and stands the test of time, long after we've said goodbye. A couple of months ago, something a little unexpected happened that viscerally reminded me of this truth. I was having a period of time where I needed to revisit my grief for my mother and her years of illness and disability. Except technically, in this case, like now many, many years later, I wasn't really grieving her disease and her slow passing. I've already grieved that so much. There's been a lot of healing around that. But when I was revisiting this grief more recently, I realized that even though I had mourned her slow passing, I hadn't fully given myself the chance to grieve this younger version of me who lost her joy, her innocence, and her carefree youth because I was caregiving my mother during this time. It started when I was a teenager still, and it was very, very intense and difficult during my 4 years in university because my mom's condition changed so drastically during the time. First, it was her mental disability, and then it was memory loss and physical disabilities too. And when someone's disease progresses that way, the most difficult challenge is that it doesn't stay the same. It didn't plateau. Week after week, month after month, the disease progresses and her condition keeps changing and the caregiving has to somehow keep up with it. And so when I was having this reflective grieving time, revisiting that period of my life, I recalled that there were three friends of mine who were close to me. And even though they were also young, they were my age, we were like, you know, late teens and early 20s, they had no idea how to care for a parent with disabilities or, yeah, both mental and physical. And it was just so far beyond their reality. But they were close enough to me that even though we knew that they couldn't ever fully understand what I was going through, they were open enough to be close to me, to listen, and at least to try to understand what I was going through. So I remembered that one of my three friends who witnessed me during this time was my ex-boyfriend, my boyfriend at the time. And so when my mom couldn't live on her own anymore and no amount of external help or helpers could sustain her life at home, we had to move her into a care home, a facility. And because there was no facility available in Tokyo, we found a place for her in Hiroshima in the western region of Japan. It was a really beautiful place near the Seto Inland Sea. So I had this period of time in my 20s, really my entire 20s, where every year, maybe two or three times a year, I would fly down to Hiroshima, drive for like 90 minutes to visit my mom at her care facility. Now, she couldn't communicate with me anymore. One might say that she didn't remember me anymore. She couldn't say my name. She couldn't lock her eyes with mine anymore. But because we didn't know how much longer she had to live, you know, every year my siblings and I, we took the time to try to visit her, to just be with her. There were many trips that I did with my sisters and my brother, but there were just three friends that actually made the trip with me down to Hiroshima. And one of them was my ex-boyfriend in my early 20s. So a couple months ago, as I was going through this revisiting grief period, mourning the loss of May's innocence during that time, I remembered him. And gosh, it must have been years since the last time I ever contacted him or he ever contacted me. But I felt inspired and I sent him a text to say, hey, I know this is forever ago, but I was just remembering my mom and remembering that period of my life. And I wanted to thank you because I remembered that you visited my mom with me all the way down in Hiroshima. You actually made the trip down with me. And so we exchanged texts and had this lovely little conversation where he reminded me about something that I remembered, but he had a different account of it. So it was summertime, the one time that he flew down to Hiroshima with me to visit my mom. And it was my idea that I wanted to take my mom to the beach. Now, the beach was very close from the facility where she was staying at, but my mom was quite tall. She was taller than me, and with her mental and physical disabilities, it was just a lot of navigating and literal physical heavy lifting first of all, for me to change her into her swimsuit, but then for us to get her in the car and then get her out of the car and then to walk her. Well, she could still walk at the time, but with some difficulty because she didn't really have spatial recognition. And walk from the parking lot down to the beach so that she could dip her toes in the water. All that effort because I knew how much my mom loved the ocean, and we didn't know how much longer she would be able to walk or how much longer she had to live. And me, knowing that I wouldn't be able to do that alone, I asked my boyfriend at the time if he would help me take my mom to the beach. And of course, he just said yes. And he went through that whole experience with me. And so as we were texting a couple months ago, when I thanked him, he said to me, yeah, remember that time we took your mom to the beach and I couldn't stop crying. And I had forgotten all about that until he reminded me, because at the time, I didn't shed a tear. I was so used to being strong. And for just doing what I needed to do, I was so used to caregiving. It was just a part of my life. Whereas he just spent one day with us and he couldn't hold his shit together, you know, just witnessing me trying to care for my mom and us trying to dip her toes in the water. And oh man, how she loved the water. But I had forgotten that he shed all those tears for me. As soon as I read the message when he texted me, the whole scene came rushing back. And, you know, as I look back, maybe it's not, it's, I think it's less that he was crying at the scene than the fact that he was crying on behalf of me. Because I couldn't cry at the time. I carried the reality of my mom's condition for years, and I needed to hold myself together, but him, it broke him open. And as I remember that scene now, many, many years later, I'm so grateful that when we can't cry, that we have friends who cry for us. And sometimes when we cry, we have friends who cry with us. And so I thanked him, and I just felt the remembrance of this warmth in my heart. And as we wrapped up our text message conversation, he said, "I'll always care for you." And he almost didn't have to say that because I knew that. In spite of us, like, it wasn't anything romantic, you know? We knew that we weren't gonna have, like, forever together. And that wasn't the point for either of us. The relationship ended when it ended, and we're obviously at peace with it and have moved on with our lives. But it was just such a sweet recognition of how love doesn't end when the relationship ends. It just changes form. It softens into gratitude that just keeps reverberating. It stretches into time and beyond time. And sometimes it reaches across decades to remind you that it's still there after all this time. So this little text message exchange and another healing layer of my life made me think about the community that I've built here in Japan. I have this membership called The Club, and there's a bunch of people, members, who gather, who connect with one another, who support each other, uplift each other, adore each other, honor each other, and are curious about each other. There's laughter, tears, and resonance, and there's something about connecting through that level of awareness and truth and healing that's qualitatively different from, I don't know, just random, light, superficial level friends. Nothing wrong with that, of course, but it just, this idea of having this heart space reserved for each other. There's something so profoundly human about it. The way we cry for one another and the way we keep showing up, even when life feels cruel. This connection, this togetherness, like I said, there's something profoundly human about it, but that puts us in touch with this interconnectedness of humanity. And I guess it's that I'm in awe of it, as hard and challenging as it is at times. At the end of the day, I'm just in awe of the beauty of this connection and community and togetherness and heart space that just transcends time. And it's like we free ourselves, right? We free ourselves to be raw with each other. And we free each other too in witness of that. And that's what love is. It's not a possessiveness. It's not a romantic story that ends when the tale ends. But it's a silent, wordless knowing, a spaciousness that when you notice it, if you have the attentiveness to kizuku, the kizuki, it's there. Always. And so we learn to kind of listen in on it, right? And know that love doesn't end when the relationship ends. Thank you for listening. Learn more about me and my Kizuki Journaling Meiwai Method at my website, kizukijournaling.com. That's KIZUKIJOURNALING.com. Or find me on Instagram at MAEYOSHIKAWA.